Sunday! Every Sunday, side by side at the microphone for the green light to the speed trap, Ray Guarino and Jody calls them as they seize them, and you better believe them. Here, relevant news, biased opinion, and outright nonsense regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! It's mechanical trickery never before broadcast over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Ray and Joe cuss each other down track, barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disasters as they shake hands with the devil. All that and so much more at high noon this Sunday on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and the Live Feed, Ray Guarino and Joe D. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free every Sunday at noon on WHBC. Take the Hempstead Turnpike to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway sign. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass.
Yes, indeedy. Thank you, Scotty Goss and Combo, for that great introduction to the Motormouth Radio Extravaganza with your host, Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer, and all the fine cast of thousands we have helping us out behind the scenes to make this thing work. We are here and live, the only show where you can learn how to do a show warm-up and tongue twister at the same time. Your hosts, Chris, you may want to give people an example of that. I don't know.
What, do you want me to show my radio homework? We had to do tongue twisters when I was on the air, when I was a baby DJ on the air, we had to do tongue twisters. And one of them was, all right, I'm going to try and do this again without screwing it up. Okay, ready?
Yes.
One smart fellow, he felt smart. Two smart fellows, they felt smart. Three smart fellows, they all felt smart.
Beautiful. I was of the rubber baby buggy bumper. You see how well I did with that. But, so anyway.
Yeah, those are the things we had to. That was homework. Yeah. Walking around the house doing that. That was homework. How are you, Ray Ray? What's going on in the wonderful world of Motormouth Radio? Dum, 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 dum.
Oh, very good. Got a lot of stuff going on. Let me mention to people, if they'd like to get in on the fun and chat with us, they can give us a call at 516-256-9510. And, of course, be sure to check us out on our social media outlets, platforms, Motormouth Radio on the internet, our website, on Facebook, and on Twitter. And Joe's favorite is Real_Motormouth Radio on Instagram.
Yes.
I know I've been a little lax. I have some stuff I want to post. I just haven't. By the time I sit down in the evening, yeah, I know people post on the bus. They do it in the deli. They do it like, you know, my daughter can do it as she's, you know, walking down the street. Me, I need to sit and, you know, like, sidle up to it a little. I need to get, like, ready.
You need to ruminate.
I got to get my thoughts. I have to get my words right. I have to make sure the pictures are ready. And then
light a candle.
You're right. Incense, a little bit of incense. And then, I have to write my black coffee. I got to get a little bit of a,
black light bulb, you know, with the, in the 7-Up can.
Right.
Or the bulb with the flickering light.
Right. Yeah. I have to be prepared. So I've been lax because I've been busy with other stuff. Sorry. You know, but so we will. We'll put some stuff up. We'll catch everybody up on what's going on. One of the things that I'm going to catch people up on is new news here in this whole household. Yesterday, I had the joyous pleasure of having to move a minivan, an SUV, and a boat, so I could get my car out of the bay in the shop.
What?
Yeah. My Pontiac did leave the shop and went to the other shop to be looked at. We had to have Steve just take a look at an adjustment on the door. And now the car is home. So my Pontiac has now come home.
Wow.
And polished and bespectacled glory. It's in the garage again.
So did it roll out of the shop and roll its eyes, its headlights, and go, oh, sunlight, what is that?
Actually, to tell you the truth, the sun went, oh, my word, that car is up there. It's so shiny. Because now everything is bright and shiny. It really is like a jewel. And I did something I haven't done, especially to that car in 45 years of ownership. I actually washed it. and chamoyed it without a drop of rust or imperfection on it, and it felt like somebody else's car.
I am so glad. Congratulations. You deserve this more than anybody, that you now have for, I would say, at this very moment, a show car that you're going to turn into a driver, obviously, that, because it's not going to, I don't think that car is ever going to be a garage queen of any type, but you now have a show car so enjoy it, revel in it. The season's almost over. Get out there with this silly thing. Right?
it's going to be as much of a garage queen as it will be a show car, because it will really be neither. I'm going to use it I will drive it, and I'm not a car show guy. I'm a cruise night guy. I like to go, to Kilowatt Kevin the other night, he congratulated me on the thing. And I said, listen, I said, my accolades, I take a lot of, my joy comes from when friends, car guys that I know, who I respect their work and I respect their eye, like you, Chris, believe it or not. People say, what are you asking that guy for?
he can't find his butt with both hands. What are you asking him for?
But when the crew that I know and I respect, when they'll say something, either positive and, believe it or not, even negatively, as a suggestion, that to me is worth more than anything. Listen, I've been a car show judge since 1979. I know what some of these hacks do out there.
Oh, I'm sure. And you know, my pointing at your car and laughing doesn't bother you in the least.
No. and the reason is because I know what I did and why I did it. And that's good enough for me. You know, I have faith in it. And the thing with my car is, we've discussed this since I started doing it, I did not do a stock restoration. That's almost the easiest restoration to do, because you have all the examples that came before it. You have a manual, you have pictures. Yeah. You know, I didn't do that. I did a resto mod, which now is up to the owner to decide how he wants to do it. And yeah, people aren't going to agree with what I did, and that's okay, because they don't have to. It's not theirs.
It's not theirs. No, you're absolutely right. And we discussed this, I think, one time when just probably before you pulled that car out of its sarcophagus, I think we discussed, I was all for doing a stock resto on the car, and you gave me a very comprehensive reason why you shouldn't. And I wish I could remember what show that was, because I'd love to listen to it again to remember what you had said. But it was along the lines of, you didn't get it stock. You didn't get that. That car was already being modded out by the time you received it in the 10 years it was rolling on the streets.
Yeah.
So you thought that was not going to be, and mind you, not only that, but you spent, you know, that was one car that is unique enough that you learned on that car. I always said that, why keep your first car? Because you have to deal with all the mistakes you made, but you all made all the mistakes on that car and then fixed them, which I mean, just the story you told about the firewall, having to weld up all the holes that you made on the firewall of that car. Cause all the times you had to drill a hole to put some whatever crazy thing you were putting into the vehicle.
No, you mount the big yellow Excel super coil on there. Then you mount, like, I had a Mallory coil on there somewhere. And maybe it was, I don't even know what else. But yeah, you're right. There were a bunch of holes that now had to go. And the same thing in the trunk, where the trunk floor rises to that rear shelf area where the shocks mount. There were holes in there because I had an electric fuel pump mounted over there. I had a fuel filter mounted over there at one point. So you get in there with the welder and you zip them up, and then you grind them and you clean it up.
Wow, that's amazing. That car was one big aftermarket catalog. That's what that car was.
It was exactly what we drove every day, all of us. And that's just the way it was. And we all did that. Some people did worse than others. Some people actually made body mods. I never did that. In fact, the one thing I told, again, I told Kevin this, I was actually, I'm actually proud of this one thing, a mod that I made that I was able to reverse. And this is back again, like in 78, I did this. I was mounting my Craig PowerPlay in-dash radio, and it was too big for the radio opening. So right where the shafts come through the holes, I sliced on top and on the bottom of those holes and then folded those tabs into the dash. Right. Because my car has a panel that covers all that. Put the radio in, and it was fine. And I thought even then, like, if I ever want to go back to a stock radio, I can unfold those tabs. And that's what I did. Unfolded them, welded them. And then now a stock radio can go in. And again, the filler panel goes over it so you don't see it.
Right, right. No, that is something that you and I don't agree on much, but that was one thing that you and I think hold true, is the fact that you want to do the mod so that if you decide to reverse it, you can. And I'm a firm believer of that. I mean, I'm more of a stock guy than you are. I like to find the stock thing, put the stock thing in the car, and work with all the stock components. I enjoy doing that. You know, like, I love optioning out a vehicle with whatever the options were available at that time. And just real quick, I did the just before the summer, I put the passenger mirror on the Chrysler. I don't think it was offered in 69. I don't think there was a passenger mirror offered on that car. But I thought, you know what? I'm going to do it. And I found a guy that had two mirrors from a 70, which were the same ones. And I said, you know what? I'm going to put it on the car. I'm going to do this. And that's what I did. Mounted it up. And now, mind you, it didn't come with the car. But I found the stock Chrysler item and hung it on the car. And you can't tell.
Interesting you say that, because last week in the shop, I have a right side mirror on my car as well. And Mike said to me, he goes, this car didn't come with this. I'm like, oh, hell no. No, definitely not. I said, but, and I did what he did on his Chevelle. I added it as he did. And we both found out on the A-body, you can't see crap out of it. Because where the mirror lines, now you want to put it in the same spot on the door as the other one. It should be up on the fender. And I actually have the nose I bought for my car many years ago had holes on the fenders. That's where Pontiac put the mirrors in 65.
Really?
I have original photos that show that. That gets the angle to see behind the car correctly. So when you put it, I mean, on the driver's side, it's not that. I guess because of the relation of where the driver is to the door and the mirror, that angle is different than when you look across the car at the mirror that's outside the passenger door. I couldn't adjust it to get the right field of vision. You just couldn't do it. So what I did is I had my friend Ricky, who may be listening today. You know, Ricky and Jeff, the glass guys that I know. In fact, Jeff's got to come over and touch up the doors. I got to get the glass fixed up because we got it in, but it's not 100%. So Ricky does a lot of house mirrors and things like that. And these guys know glass and know mirrors. I said, Rick, I want a convex mirror for the right side. Because I need to have that angle, and a convex mirror would give that to me. And he was able to find a piece of convex mirror and cut it and mount it in the housing for me. So when Mike had mentioned that to me, I said, yeah, now unlike your Chevelle, whose mirror is useless except for aesthetics, mine works. And he was like, why? And then I explained to him. Mike said, yeah, I had Ricky put a piece of convex glass in here, and now I can see, you know, better at least. So
you mean you don't do this? You don't sit at the steering wheel in your car and then look over at the mirror, look to your right, and then do this? Look down, look up, look to the side, look around, look, wait a minute, I think I see something, wait a minute. You don't do that, huh?
No, I'll tell you this, that just brought up, you know, it was amazing when I had the car, I was driving this car for like 4 or 5 years already since I had the mechanicals done, and in prime I would always get, you know, you get thumbs up, you get waves. People see an old car, it's straight, it looks cool.
They hold their nose, they go, oh.
Well, yeah, when they get behind me, they might, because of the carbon monoxide.
Yeah, you run that thing rich, yes.
Driving yesterday, I don't realize what this car looks like. You know, when you're so close to it, you kind of take it for granted. Actually, after I watched it, I stepped back, I put it in the garage, and I stood back and said, wow. Because now I'm seeing things shining that never shone before. Just a stupid trip yesterday between shops into my house. There was a guy at a bus stop that literally jumped off the curb into the street giving me thumbs up. The bus is coming, man.
Wow. Isn't that great?
You know, It is. And that's why I tell people all the time, we've said it on this show many, many times, you don't have to have a show car. Get the car you had in high school. You know, get the Maverick, the AMX, you know, the Duster. Well, Duster.
The Vega.
The Vega, whatever it is. I don't care. And you know what? people are going to recognize that car for what it is.
Sure.
And they're going to give you some thumbs up. You know?
Oh, no, totally. But it's kind of funny because look at the individual that gave you the thumbs up when the car was in prime. Usually it was someone in the automotive world or someone with a certain amount of automotive knowledge that knows that you were in the process of putting that car together, that you had a love for that car and that you it was a work in progress. But those guys that give you the thumbs up when it's shiny, it's like, that's kind of interesting because they're the people that may not be a car guy. They may just be someone that just appreciates a clean, good-looking vehicle. So it is kind of, you know, you get like, you may get kids coming up to you going, hey, mister, you know, what kind of car is that? You know,
that brings back a funny story. A few years ago, I was driving the car, and this is when I had gotten the hood painted. So the hood was the color that the car is now, and the rest of the car was that gray prime. And the prime was so cool because it was gray, but it had a little bit of a lavender tint to it.
Yeah, it did.
So you just – and I like that. It almost – I had people ask me, what color is that? You know, I'm like, it's not a color. It's prime, but it's cool. That's why I wanted to leave it. So I had a guy once in traffic, you know, follow me, riding the quarter panel, riding my door, finally got next to me at a light. And it was funny because the guy was to my left. So his wife was in the passenger seat and he's yelling across his wife, you know, leaning across her. And she's relaying the message. He's like, what color is that car? I'm like, it's prime. What color are you going to paint it? I'm like, and he's in an SUV. I was like, dude, look at the hood. I'm like, you're higher than me. Look at the hood. That's the... Oh, I didn't even – he said, I didn't even see that. He didn't see the beautiful painted hood because he was looking at the rest of the prime body.
Wow.
I thought that was that, – that amazed me.
That is funny. That is funny. But it's the truth. And that's the joy of having that type of car, that you have a vehicle that really is worthy of someone's – taking someone's breath away. That's awesome. That is an awesome feeling. And I'd say ride it out.
Oh, yeah. No, I will. I want to relay something to you because this was very prophetic. I had to go to the shop, and I said Steve was going to look at the door. You know, Steve's been on the show. Boy, he's called us. And, of course, Steve teaches at BOCES. He was associated with the AutoZeum. He teaches auto body, and he's a car show judge himself. He judges Westbury Gardens. He's got provenance. He knows his stuff. And we were talking about the windows in the car and how I have to get them now just – touched up perfectly. And he goes, yeah, you don't realize how many adjustments are on those windows.
Oh, yeah.
Glass in those cars. I mean, there's up, down, forward, back, tilt this way. There's like probably 8 or 10 adjustments. And he was saying, you know, not till cars got the first car that was built robotically, which he said was the Taurus.
Oh.
He said, and I didn't know that. He says, when the Tauruses were built with robots, did cars become easier to build on the assembly line? He says, now, if you think of it, that glass in that car, guys had to put that in and adjust it on the assembly line. Everything had to be done. There was so many, all the door gaps had to be done manually, everything. And he says, that's why cars came out looking like crap. I mean, you know, like we say, if you restored a car correctly, the gaps wouldn't be correct. Things wouldn't line up. There'd be fisheye in the paint. There'd be all sorts of crazy stuff, or orange peel. There'd be all sorts of crazy stuff because it was just out the door, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So cars had to get over-restored. And it made me think about, how much harder it was to build a car in an assembly line back in that era when every little thing had to be paid attention to, as opposed to when robots do it and guys don't have to, it's hands off. And the car comes out as one would say a better product because of the robots. Now the robots, you know, they're painted, everything is done robotically. So just something I never really thought before that kind of, you know, was an interesting little thought about how.
No, it makes a lot of sense. You talk about your dashboard. The dashboard on the GTO is got it has those panels on it. There's screws in there. There's nuts on the back of every single component that, like you say, hands had to build. I had to take apart the dash on the Explorer, on the 2014 Explorer, to put the console in, and all of those pieces were all plastic, and they all had those type of clips that you can install them with the ball of your hand, where you just put the finish panel on and go thump, thump, thump. It's in. That's it. And that's how you take it out. You pry it out with the plastic screwdriver, with those plastic pry bars. You pry it all out. It all comes apart so easily. And I think it's like you say, it's very robotic the way these things, the way these components are all put together. And that's where I enjoy working on newer cars, because it, as long as you take them out gingerly and not snap them in half. But a lot of stuff, when you're putting it all back together again, doesn't require tools, where it's just dunk, 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 dunk. That's it. And that's that to me is pretty cool.
Like you said, the plastic is an issue because that stuff breaks and cracks all the time. That's the problem. You know, another thing I had a little trouble with is to put all the reveal moldings around the windows. We did the back and the windshield last week. The back window went okay. The windshield, there's a couple spots I couldn't get perfect. I'm going to have Jeff take a look at it. Again, you're doing it by hand so somebody had to do that on an assembly line. There had to be a guy who was a trim installer, you know?
Yeah, right. That was his specialty.
I don't know if he did anything else, but. That's how cars were built, but
no, it's true. But the thing that you know me, the thing that I enjoy about a vehicle is when those things are all working well. I would much rather be driving a car fully in prime, knowing that the windows all seat correctly and the panels are all lined up correctly. I love when a vehicle looks like one piece, where it doesn't look like a sum of parts. It looks like one solid piece. And I bought the worst car in the world to try and achieve that.
Right.
That Chrysler that has this huge sweeping quarter panel and this huge sweeping door, and they have to be damn near perfectly lined up in order to have that effect. And boy, is that a pain in the butt. And I've tried it. And I'm getting close, but to align a major body panel without chipping the paint is an ordeal.
I want to tell you something. This was the problem we had. The passenger door, my car's a two-door, and the passenger door closed well. Now, there's new weather strips, so it's going to be a little tight. You know that. But the driver's door, you'd close it, and it would go like that first latch and be open. You really had to slam it. And then it would close, and we were ruminating on what to do. And Mike, who's a fantastic body man, the guy who's been in a trade forever, he was looking. He says, listen, the door gaps are like near perfect between the quarter panel and the fender. When you feel between the fender and the door and the door and the quarter panel to see if there's a drop or a rise, he goes, they're lined up perfect. He said, maybe it's something on the hinge end. So I relayed the story to him of when I had my Cadillac, had my 81 Eldorado. Mm-hmm. And again, the driver's doors always get worn more than the passenger door.
Sure.
And my friend TJ, who's another fantastic body man, he says, I could fix that. You'd close the door with a normal shove, and the door would just close on one latch and be open a little. You'd have to slam it. I said, it's a Cadillac. You shouldn't have to slam the door. The other side is nice and gentle. So he said, we were out in front of my house, and he says, go get me a 15/16 and like a 1 1/16 inch socket. And I'm like, wait a minute, there's no bolts in there that. He goes, don't argue with me. Just go get me the sockets. I'm like, yes, boss.
Yeah, don't argue with TJ.
So I got the sockets. I came back, and he looked at one and the other, and he threw one on the ground, and he took one, and he, with the door open, laid it into the area where the hinges are.
Yeah.
And started closing the door till it closed on it, and he held pressure, and then he backed off. And then he went, woof, on the door. And I went, ah! and then, with the coolness that only a body man or TJ could do, he then looked up at me and opened the door, still looking at me firmly in the eyes. And I heard the socket go clink onto the ground.
Yeah.
And then he took the door with his fingertips and he pushed it and it went click.
Wow.
And I said, you got mother jumper. How did you, what did I just see? I just witnessed like the part of the war. What did you do? Because I adjusted the hinges. It's an old body man's trick. We used to use, wood or whatever we got. I like a socket. So Mike and I were talking about that. Mike says, yeah, he used wood. Because body man's best tool was a hunk of 2x4 that you could use to like tap a molding on or adjust the hinge or, 900 other things. So, again, Steve and I were talking about that. And I said, Steve, Mike wanted me to come over so you could adjust this hinge like TJ had done on my other car. He's looking at the car over. He goes, I don't think it needs that. He goes, I really don't think. He goes, these lines are too perfect. The gaps are too perfect. The door is right. He goes, I don't want to screw with that. I was like, oh, so what are we going to do? And he opened the door, and I had put new rubber bumpers on the door, you know, that I never had in my life on that car. You know, I'm like, he goes, you know, put these in. I'm like, yeah. He goes, you know what? He took one out, and he just closed the door. And I swear on my – it went click, click. It closed.
Oh, my gosh.
He says, okay, you got to take these. Let's cut these in half. He goes, we don't need all the – I'm like, wow.
Yeah, oh,
I, you know, I bow to you because, again, a guy who knew a hell of a lot more than me, I never professed to know body work, knew, thank God he didn't go for the hammer or the torch or the sockets first, right?
Sure, sure.
And that's why, that's the takeaway. Always find someone who knows more than you to solve a problem if you're not confident with it. And thank God that there's guys around me who do know a hell of a lot more than me.
Wow, that's incredible. No, that's perfect. It's exactly a remedy is a lot of times. And like you say, those bumpers, you know, they never get put back on cars a lot of times. And I'm always a stickler for things like that. If you see those two little holes on the inside of the door, there's a bumper missing there, and I'm going to go find it.
You know, and I was giddy because I never had them. I mean, maybe there was one and it was crushed. I put the ones under the hood. You know, I put the whole kit. But now I'm thinking of it last night, and I said, they go on the actual door itself.
Right.
And when the door closes, I don't know. I got to look at it again close. Because
they keep the well. Here's what they do: they keep the door from going every time you get a bump
on the latch.
That's what they do.
I mean, I'll tell you this: when I was driving it before, I didn't have them in, and I didn't. It didn't rattle. So I guess it's maybe just a safety, a precautionary measure to make sure it doesn't. It's like belt and suspenders. I guess I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah. It makes me crazy. I popped the hood on the 300, and on both sides there are no rubber bumpers that on the fenders that will kind of cradle the hood when you close it. There are none. They're not there. And it's like it makes me berserk because I know Chrysler. I know that they watch every single tenth of a penny. And if there's a bumper that's there, it's there for a reason. They don't put anything extra on a vehicle. I haven't done that in 100 years. So it's something that needs to be there. Now, mind you, I don't know what it looks like. I have to go find it. I have to search out, find out what it looks like, buy four of them. I think I have a rough idea of what it's supposed to look like and how it's supposed to be affixed to the side of the fender. But you go online and like you go on eBay and there are these, I don't know, entrepreneurs, for lack of a better word, that is trying to sell them for like $19.95 a piece. And I'm like, I will not spend that kind of money for a piece of rubber. I'll take an old rag and fold it in half and stick it on there with some glue and call it a day before I spend $20 a pop for six of those things.
Well, I guess you don't have any of the reproduction catalogs for any of the Chrysler products that you could look that up, because in the book I use, I use Ames. I mean, all that stuff is
right
in that catalog. I mean, everything, every little, even the license plate bumpers, I mean, you name it, it's in there, you know. Wow. But I'll tell you one thing they don't have. And I was going through a large email trail. On the window, the way the window goes up and down, there's an L bracket that comes off the track, and there's a rubber bumper on that L bracket, and that's the lower window stop.
Okay.
It exists nowhere.
Really?
And it just has a triangular bottom that goes through a slit in the bracket, and it's a flat thing. And again, mine were crushed from being 55 years old.
Right.
And I looked through Ames. I called them. They didn't have it. I actually got in touch with Steel Rubber Company, who – you know, makes all they're one of the biggest rubber places in the country. One of the guys there says, no, you know, he goes, we don't have it. He goes, but I'll tell you what, I just did a restoration on a C10 truck. He goes, I had the same problem. I couldn't find those. I just found something else that fit.
I was going to say who would know if you would use something different?
Well, no, nobody would know. What I ended up doing is I had a couple of the, cause you know, you buy things twice. I plenty of parts I've bought. I've got two and three sets of them, even with the rest. You know, you forget. So I had some of those door bumpers. And what I did is I just cut it kind of in half and put it in. And now that's my rubber. So it just did not exist in the catalogs. Why? I don't know.
But, because everybody's been using some other rubber bumper to put in their place of it.
It was funny that the guy at the rubber company didn't know. So, but I'll tell you what I do know. It's time to take a break and reestablish this fine program. I meant to do that a little earlier and give this info, but I didn't. So we will take a break on Motormouth Radio, Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer, and we'll be back with more of I actually have a very interesting piece out of the automotive world. But first, do we have our honor group of the hour, which the video is up now on Motormouth Videos on YouTube. You should check that out. And
yes. Yeah, it's become quite a tradition, the video, our internet know-it-all has put up videos of the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour, and this week is no different, that is right, because the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour this week, if you loaned out tools that need to be returned, that's right, go to your neighbor and say, where's my lawnmower? And he'll say, where's my pop rivet gun? And go find the individual who borrowed your flashlight or your vice grip or your cement mixer or whatever it is, and make sure you bring all the junk that you borrowed back to them. But if you loaned out tools that need to come home, you're part of the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour. There you go.
For this, you know, week. How many times that's the topic in Blondie, the cartoon between Dagwood and Herb, the neighbor. They're always, hey, can I borrow your drill? Wait, you didn't return my weed whacker. Oh, okay. Yeah, very good. That's a good one, Chris. That's very good. We will be back with more Motormouth Radio in a few minutes. And after we take care of these few spots on 90.3. WHPC. This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Lynbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop you want to have your car fixed at. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. And yes, se habla español. More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or visiting online at celebritychasecollision.com.
Shake off the realities of the day, broaden your musical horizons, and embrace the diversity every Monday afternoon at 5 for 2 hours of Revelations. The show offers a potently unique collection of music with an emphasis on themes and rock rarities, an occasional tour de force of blues and soul mixed with compelling sets of folk and folk rock. I'm Steve Kaye, and I've got the perfect soundtrack for your drive home every Monday afternoon at 5. On Revelations, right here on the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC.
All righty, we're back on Motormouth Radio. Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer, 516-256-9510. Give us a call. If you want to talk about this next topic, which is kind of interesting, I find this one very, very talk worthy. The California governor, Gavin Newsom, he's issued an executive order, Chris, saying all new vehicles made after 2035 must be zero emissions compliant, meaning no gas engines anymore.
I was waiting for this one. I saw this and I went, Ray is going to be all over it.
Yeah. I did find out that subsequently that the UK, Ireland, Germany, and the Netherlands were going to follow that same dictum, but they're actually shooting for 2030. They're going for earlier over there.
Wow.
And we talked about
what's the year that California said that they want to do this by?
2035.
Okay, so think about it. Now, how far is that from? That's 15 years from now, right? Yeah. That will put me somewhere in the geriatric driving club at that point, and I won't care.
Yeah. I'll still be banging gears, hopefully.
I'll be like, hey, where are we?
Right.
I'll be calling you, Ray, where am I?
Well, you're right next to me, you moron. What are you talking? We were talking about this on Playing in Traffic Thursday night, and we mentioned that, things change all the time, but typically California sets, where automotive is concerned, California sets the bar and we follow it. We have with emissions, we have with the inspections, all of that stuff, for many, many years. So I'm waiting to see. I haven't heard any rumblings from the East Coast yet on what they think about this. So, but it's just, it's interesting. So I'm curious what people have to think about it.
This also, just because it's the zero emission vehicles, that's from 2035 and on. I mean, it's not like you have to take your car and junk your V8 out of the GTO and drop an electric motor in there.
Well, they haven't said that yet.
Oh, yeah. I think that's I think I remember reading something along those lines that it's not going to be for vehicles that are already gasoline engines that are already on the road. Those are grandfathered. So I guess your 2034 Toyota Camry is going to be just fine.
I do remember that little program, like 1-800 cars for kids. Remember Cash for Clunkers?
Sure.
Where they got rid of thousands of cars.
Yeah.
Come out with an incentive like that again. If you can get cash for a car that's sitting there, that's, you know, if they want to put the push on, they will. So yeah, it remains to be seen. And like you said, I think electric is obviously going to be the predominant replacer for gasoline. But then I've read other articles that said there's no where, you know, one group says we're running out of fossil fuel. And another says we got so much fossil fuel and stuff in the ground that we're never going to run out. And so again, who do you believe and which one? I mean, of course, we have grease and oil and gas in our veins. We grew up with it, but.
Of course. The thing is, yes, we have an exorbitant amount of it, but is it economically feasible to remove it from the ground? Because case in point, we can go up to Alaska and yeah, there's an environmental issue with that and yank whatever oil or gas or whatever fossil fuel is in the ground. But if you think about it, it probably costs three times as much to pull a barrel of that out of there than it would Texas or Saudi Arabia. So it's all economics. Once the price of fossil fuel gets up to a certain point, then they'll go, oh, let's go get the gas up there. Let's go get the fossil fuel up there. They'll go to those remote areas where it costs more to remove that fossil fuel. So it all comes down to dollars and cents. But the thing that kind of bothers me about an electric vehicle is when you have a gasoline-powered vehicle, you can take that car and park it in a garage for 100 years. And then you take it out of the garage and basically rebuild the vehicle. And as long as you have a gallon of gasoline, you can get that car to run. Well, what can you do about restoring an electric vehicle? You can take an electric vehicle, put it in the garage for 100 years, and you're going to get back a paperweight. Because will it roll? Who knows? What will that battery do? That battery only has a certain lifespan to it. So we're going to have to be, as automotive restorers in the next century, we're going to have to be battery builders. So we're going to have these tanks of acid in our garages to rebuild these batteries in this makeshift fashion. And there'll be motor mouth radio electronics. You know, I'll be saying, hey, Ray, guess what? I built a battery with these plates of cardboard and peanut butter. And it works really good.
You know, they're not lead acid batteries. You're looking at lithium ion. So that's stuff that's, and there are places that are doing it because, you know, I have a lithium ion battery in my motorcycle. There are companies who are making them now. That's the technology. You know, and of course, there's other sources, there's hydrogen and things like that. You know, like you said, you hit it from the angle that we come at it from, the you know, the heartwarming, the emotional angle. Like in 100 years, you could take that car out. Manufacturers thinking like, well, who cares? That's not, you know, we're not worried about that. We're worried about, again, like you said, dollars and cents.
That's
it. If you don't want to rebuild it, scrap it. You know, so maybe, you know, I say this all the time. Maybe our little microcosm of the world is, you know, we're just such a small little piece of sand in the hourglass of time.
Thank you, General Hospital. Well, we were going to go to the phones.
Maybe the way it's going to work out is our this little thing called the Industrial Revolution and gasoline powered engines and automobiles that we are a part of in our life, inconsequentially in the bigger picture of the world, is going to be just that little fingertip blip of, oh yeah, they used to do that, you know.
Yep.
But we're so embedded and ingrained in it because we grew up with it that, you know, it means a lot to us. But
no, you're absolutely right. And who's going to, I mean, think about it. In 50 years, who's going to restore that Prius?
Well, right.
Who can restore? I mean, I feel badly for some of the gasoline engine vehicles that are out there now. If any kids, I mean, kids are getting into the automotive, the kids that are getting into automotive, the automotive hobby slash sport slash whatever you want to call it, business, they're going in a direction that's kind of cool, that they're going into the smaller cars. They're finding those Civics, they're finding those Dodge Neons, they're finding those Chevy Cobalt SSs, they're finding those cars, but those cars are so heavy into technology that they have to restore that, and they have to take into consideration motherboards and computer components and how to rebuild those things and how to adjust them to in the way that we would adjust a carburetor, or in a way that we would adjust anything for that matter.
Yeah, we've talked about this for many years. And one of the things that I, again, coming from an electronic background, one of the things that I always thought of was what's going to happen with just cars from the 90s, from the late 80s and 90s, when they come around cycle to be restored and rebuilt. What about, you know, the sensors? Obviously, there's places that do computers. There always have been places that'll do the ECM. But right. The sensors and those ancillary switches and components and modules, you know, now you're looking at cars that have sometimes 80 or more modules in them, body control modules. I think that at some point there's going to be cottage industries that rise up that either rebuild or make replacements for that. There's going to have to be, or else those cars are not going to be able to be used, unless you want to use them without windows and windshield wipers or anything that's controlled by a module, you know, if you want to deal with it that way, because it's like our cars, we can crank down the windows when we want air and you can roll them back up.
Right.
Yes, there's a labyrinth of tracks and rollers and assemblies in there, but they're, you know, you can adjust them with your hands. You can get in there. You don't need an oscilloscope and a spectrum analyzer to be able to figure out what the hell's going on.
Yeah. They don't have a lifespan per se.
Right.
They can be rebuilt. They can be reused.
The rubber parts have the lifespan. Like we were saying, the felt and the rubber, that's what you change. You don't change the track unless there was an accident damage.
Right. Know? Exactly it. Like, case in point, I would love to buy a Lincoln, one of those Mark 7s, Mark 8s.
Great cars, yeah.
Great cars. But when you talk about the modules that are totally unique to that vehicle, and they control things like ride height and as well as engine performance and interior operation, you're like, holy smokes, if that thing goes, the car drops to the ground, you're done. That's it.
Well, that's happened years ago already. You know, when I was working in the shop by my house, that's going back years. That's when the Lincolns with the air shocks, they were blowing out.
Mm-hmm.
You can only get those shocks. You couldn't get them. Monroe didn't make an air shock to replace it. You couldn't put hijackers in it from Gabriel. You had to go back to Ford or Mercury to get the parts, and it was like $1,200 at the time for a pair of shocks. And guys were saying, oh my God, I'm not going to, you know, the car's great otherwise, but I ain't going to put $1,200 into the shocks. What can I do as an aside? And what guys would do is they would take the air shocks out and put in some bolt in other shocks, and you wouldn't have that adjustability. And because it was all automatic. My Caprice wagon had automatic leveling shocks in the back that actually worked, by the
really?
Way. Yeah, they actually worked.
Wow.
So, you know, guys were working around it even then, like, all right, let's just get a factory set of shocks that'll fit. There's no parts listing for it because they weren't listed for that car. But a sharp parts guy knows, all right, well, it's that chassis. So out of a lower level car that didn't come with the air ride, we'll put those, you see if those shocks will go in. And they did. So, yeah, you know, I wonder, will guys be, and I'm sure there will be guys who'll be swapping modules. Like, hey, you know what? I got this module out of a Civic. Let's try it in the Accord, you know, and some kid who's got more guts than brains will do that in the driveway, and maybe he'll make smoke, and maybe he'll make more power. You know, who knows?
It's
hot rodding reinvented.
Yeah, it is. It truly is. There are pluses to this, but when it comes down to restoring a vehicle, and like you say, we're looking at a small segment of it. We're not looking at what the factories, what the manufacturers, the people that are only worried about profit margin. We're not looking at it from their point of view. We're looking at it from our cottage industry. Who knows? Maybe in 20, 30 years, no kid in his right mind is going to want to restore a vehicle. They'll all be these transportation pods that are all lit. It'll look like that Woody Allen sleeper movie where they're all just these glowing pods moving about on the roads or in the air, or who knows. And maybe no one will want it. Maybe they'll be restoring their phones. You know, hey, look, I got this old Samsung S10 from 2016. Let's see if we can restore this. Maybe they'll be doing that. We'll be Motormouth Digital Transformer Radio.
Keep your backups.
You mean like this?
Nice.
I think it's the same phone. Wait a minute.
No, yours is bigger.
Thank you.
Yeah, you have a larger one. Definitely.
Mine is longer.
It is.
My voice is deeper.
Looks wider too. We don't need a video for this, truthfully. Yeah, we don't. Yeah. Anyway. Right. So that's I watch a lot of YouTube stuff, and I see guys who are doing Yes, that phone does work, by the way. That's why it truly is a backup. I've seen guys on the internet who are doing stuff like this. They're swapping stuff from older cars to newer cars, and usually these guys are like in, you know, Pennsylvania or wherever the heck they are in the backwoods. But that's always been kind of the group who was going to be the guys who futz around with this stuff. It wasn't your white collar crowd. It was the guys in the backyard like we grew up. You know, and if you your carburetor was shot and you scrounged off another car, you didn't care if it was the correct one or not. And
no.
You know, and you put it on, you said, oh, wow, how do I make all this stuff hook up? You know, give me a paper clip, give me some wire. I gotta make something. And I mean, I saw some of the worst abortions in my life. I'm sure you did too, growing up, with what
you totally
did to make cars run.
Oh my gosh, yes. Hey, speaking of which, I just got to throw something. Oh, let's go to the phones. Let's do that. Perfect timing.
All right.
And say hi. You're on with the Motormouths.
Hello, hello, boys.
Hey, Mark. What's happening?
What's up, brother? How are you?
I wasn't sure the number, but I had to look back in the text. How you doing, guys?
Very good.
Well. Sorry to interrupt. I have a question for you guys.
I love Mark. You know the guy who apologizes for interrupting. I love
for calling a radio show.
I said, well, you know, I can't hear Chris too well, but that might be a good thing. I'm not so sure, but whatever. Hey, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
The old 2000 Infiniti i30. I believe it needs a front motor mount.
Okay.
Now this thing has electronics in it or a coil. I don't understand why. Can I just replace it with one without the coil? What can I possibly do?
Oh, you know what? I've read a bunch of articles about motor mounts. Some of them are electroelastomer. There's also, yeah, the Infiniti probably has one that maybe has a shock cylinder in it. The bottom line is, if you can get one to replace it that doesn't have that, yes, you can use it. You may feel a little more, you may pick up a little vibration or a little rumble now and again, but I'm sure you can put up with that.
Okay, yeah. I was at the station because I wasn't sure. I mean, I'm getting a clunk, you know, and with the hood open, I can see when I put it in drive and I give it the gas. You see the engine come back and you feel a clunk to it.
I got
to
tell you something.
I mean, I think there's four. Yeah, go ahead.
On my Mazda, it's transverse engine, and I had a clunk also when I took off, and it sounded like the right front wheel. I thought the strut was bad again, and I got it. I looked at everything, and I'm prying and moving things, and I couldn't find any other movement. I put another set of struts in that car just last winter. I put quick struts in it, and the clunk was still there. Only when I unbolted the big giant horseshoe style upper motor mount and saw that it came apart in two pieces, did I say, oh, I better replace this. But I couldn't, it didn't move around when I was testing it. Like, I mean, it totally defied logic. And as soon as I replaced it, clunk gone. So I'm glad you found it the easy way, Mark. You're luckier than I was.
Yeah, well, I, you know, actually, it's been shifting, getting a clunk going into second every now and then. And it, like you said, it sounded like to me it was coming from the right rear, you
okay.
know, like the strut or shock, whatever the hell's in there. And like, But, you know, I took it to the station. He said, yeah, blah, blah, blah. The one with the coil, oh, it's expensive, blah, blah, blah. The part is going to be like $230 and, you know, $400 total with labor. And I, you know, I went online looking around. Like I went to, what is it?
Rock Auto?
Rock Auto, yeah, thanks. Rock Auto. And, you know, they have a whole plethora of them. There's like the most decent expensive one, like Beck Onley. It's like, I think it was like $120, I think, whatever. I mean, is it worth putting that in there?
Well, that one does not have the electric, the coil, right? That's just...
No. Yes, it does. It does.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd do it.
Do it.
I mean, is Beck Onley as good as it used to be way back when?
Who knows? Beck Onley always has been a good name. And like you're alluding to, a lot of places that were good, trusted names now, it's not so much because they maybe farm stuff out. So I would say Beck would be one of the places I would consider as definitely buying the part. So
I would too. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
I say go.
You going to do this yourself, Mark, or are you going to
I have to really stick my head up in there and see it. It doesn't seem to be very difficult, but it's kind of tight where it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the front.
New cars now have sometimes four, this front, this side, this rear motor mount. Sometimes it's hard to find all the motor mounts on a newer car. It really is.
Yeah, I can't. There's two on the sides, one on the right side I can't even see.
Yeah.
And I hear, you know, when I was buying stuff at the auto store yesterday, the guy says, yeah, there's four mounts in there, you know, three for the engine and one in the transaxle.
Right.
But the transaxle, I mean, isn't that part of the whole? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. It's
one unit now. It's not.
That's the one I was looking at on my own car. I had it on the lift and I was looking at that one. I said, this is what's got to be clunking when I take off. And I put a pry bar in and the damn thing didn't move. I'm like, no, this mount is not bad. So it ended up, it was at that main horseshoe motor mount. So yeah. So more importantly, I thought of this the other day and you may want to hang up when you hear me ask you a question, but have you had any thoughts long term about working on a Honda 750? Yeah, you see?
The Honda 750 is no longer with me.
Oh, you got rid of it. Okay.
I listen to this one. Yeah, it was here. You know, I cleaned it up as best I could. I started to price things, and it wasn't worth the time and the money for me, and I had really not a lot of room for it.
Okay.
So I gave it to my motorcycle friend, and he goes, oh, yeah. And he took it, and he put it in his in a garage where he works.
Right.
And about, I don't know, a month into it, you know, his boss has a lot of, you know, high-priced motorcycles and stuff. And, about a month after, somebody robbed the place and took a few things, and they took the 750.
Wow!
Why would he take the 750?
Same thing like
you know, it's
parts.
Yeah, I know, and it's sad because I really like that damn thing.
I will tell you this: from the same place you got that one, the guy still has a storage shed full of them. So, if you ever want another one, just make the call. I know I can get you one.
Wow.
Well, maybe something that's mostly there.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You know.
I mean,
it was a lot of stuff he said he had in another unit somewhere, and you know, he was going to, you know, get me this and get me that, but he just never, you know, never got
that
for me.
That happens.
Whatever.
Well, Mark,
I
have to ask you a question. Something that's been plaguing me for many years. I have to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Have you perfected? Have you? No, it's along those lines. Have you perfected your windshield poop?
No, I haven't. I haven't, to be honest with you, but people that see it, that I show pictures, like, that's a good idea. You should, you know, put in a bottle and sell it on eBay or something, whatever. You know, look, in a pinch, it works great. I told you, I had to go to a wedding a couple of years ago in Pennsylvania, and as I'm, you know, the next night I'm going, like, I washed the car. I said, oh, damn, I forgot to, you know, I was like, oh, God. So I made up a little batch, put it on. I mean, because you stop at all these toll booths. There's usually cops hanging around here, you know?
Sure.
And I made it there, made it back.
Wow.
The only thing I would add to that, though, is I would think it would look a little strange if that's the only place it is on the car. Like if it was
you got to splatter a little bit here and there.
Yeah, on the roof, the hood, right. You want to kind of hit that. Because I know right now in front of my house, the birds, I guess they're storing up for the winter. Because whatever they're pooping out is like, it's very coarse and you know, it's not like the stuff you see through the summer. It's, yeah, it looks like raspberries. I don't know.
We were talking about
you can do that too. You can put that in the mix.
we were talking about we had a conversation about how I lost control of the show, and one of those times was when you had mentioned that using the whiteout and the black crayon to make this ersatz bird poop to cover up your expired inspection sticker. And the funny thing was the way you did it, because you didn't hit me with the headline first. You didn't say it first. You kind of described the concoction, and I says, that sounds like you're making bird poop. And you're like, yeah, that's what I'm doing. And that's when I lost control of the show. So
that was great, I'll tell you.
So just glad that you called, because that was my thought was after we had the conversation. I'm like, I'd love to just talk to Mark and see if he perfected the art of.
I still use it. Matter of fact, that old Bronco I have, which I'm trying to get rid of because that's beyond me also right now. And it's a shame because it looks great from the outside and it's clean and just it drives me nuts. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I mean, I had it in the driveway in the street, and I had it on there for a while. And eventually I had to put it in the driveway because I couldn't keep putting it on, you know.
Let me leave you with this, Mark, and we got to run because we're at the end of the show.
Yes. Yes.
Look into the new Bronco. It looks really cool.
Yeah.
And I think you should buy one because it's neat, and I wouldn't even mind owning one.
Yeah.
Really? I haven't seen pictures of it yet.
Check it out. Yeah.
Okay.
We got to go because Kim's ready to come in, and we got to get the heck out of here.
Okay, guys. Have a good day. Huh? Take
Thanks,
care now.
Mark.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Yeah.
Take care,
bye-bye.
Mark.
Yes. So, Chris, we're going to wrap, too. Like I said earlier, before the show, we're trying to we're going to have Stacey David on the show in the upcoming weeks, and also Davin Reckow from Haggerty. He does Haggerty Restoration thing. We're just trying to line these guys up, but in the weeks to come, we'll have them, and we'll be back. We'll keep this thing running with more fun. And until then, we should get out of here now. So what do we always tell everybody?
Don't follow us home and bring back those tools.
Exactly. So for Chris Switzer, Ray Guarino, out of here. Motormouth Radio, 90.3 WHPC. We'll see you next week. Bye.
See you, bye.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CARSTAR Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Lynbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop you want to have your car fixed at. CARSTAR Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. And yes, se habla español. More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or visiting online at celebritychasecollision.com.